Paul Bernardo and Carla Homoka, also known as the Ken and Barbie Killers. They were both attractive people with seemingly normal lives. Kenneth Bernardo, Paul's dad, grew up in a very dysfunctional family and he was very abusive to all of his female partners. Kenneth isn't actually biologically Paul's father. Marilyn, Paul's mother, had an affair and Paul was conceived. 1975, Kenneth, Paul's father, was charged with fondling a young girl. He was also sexually abusing his own daughter. He was known for being a pervert around the neighbourhood and known as a peeping Tom. This ended up causing Marilyn, Paul's mother, to spiral into a deep depression. She ended up withdrawing from family life, from being a mother, and went to live in the basement of their home. Paul was described as a very happy kid, always smiling, very happy-go-lucky. He did really well in high school, and he was very popular with the ladies, as in he had multiple girlfriends. He had a good head on his shoulders, a very bright future. He did work experience as a camp counsellor, and all of the children loved him. This completely changed when he was 16. He had a very heated argument with his mother, and that's when she told him that Kenneth wasn't his real father. He went on to complete college, still having multiple girlfriends, and he was very charming. However, what changed was that his relationships didn't last much longer than a few months. This was due to the fact that he had abusive tendencies. He started to enjoy publicly humiliating women, had a very bad temper, and started having dark sexual fantasies. In May of 1987, Paul sexually assaulted and raped a 21-year-old woman. This was his first sexual assault. In the span of 3 months, he went on to sexually assault three more women before he met Carla Homoka. They met in 1987 at a pet convention where Paul was 23 and Carla was just 17. Carla Homoka did not have a picture-perfect upbringing. When she was around 7 or 8, she tied a pillowcase to her friend's hamster and threw it out a second-story window. A couple of weeks after, the hamster was buried and she wanted to dig it up to see what her decomposing body looked like. She was, however, a very girly girl growing up, wanting to wear skirts all the time and played with Barbies. This flipped when she went to high school. She started wearing dark makeup, black nail varnish, and all black clothing. She was obsessed with death and suicide. She was also obsessed with the occult and started experiencing dark sexual fantasies. She was a real daddy's girl. However, when her father started to develop a drinking problem, he became verbally abusive. Carla used to love animals, which is how they met at the pet convention. When she was 17, she attended the convention and she was staying in a hotel above the restaurant where the convention was being held. Carla and Paul hit it off immediately and they ended up going to her hotel room. They discovered that the both of them had dark sexual fantasies and sadomasochist desires. They established roles where Paul was the king and Carla was his slave, like he was with past partners. Paul was very abusive towards Carla. However, the difference here was that Carla encouraged it. They began to fulfil each other's psychotic behaviours. However, this usually develops satiation, which leads to higher needs of stimulation required. Paul asked Carla if she would allow him to be a rapist, and she allowed it. In fact, she encouraged it. Their relationship grew very quickly, very intensely, and 2 months after meeting, they were engaged. Paul was 25 and Carla was 19. Paul continued to sexually assault women in the area in which they lived, which was Scarborough. He was donned the Scarborough Rapist. Just before Christmas in 1987, one of his victims gave a very accurate and detailed description to the police and helped draw up a composite sketch. This sketch looked so much like Paul. However, the police decided to not release the sketch to the public at that point. It was only until May 1990 that the sketch was released, 3 years later. A lot of people who knew him reported it to the police. He was reported to the police and further questioned, but the police didn't suspect him. However, they did take DNA samples of his blood and saliva before he left. Coincidentally, At the same time, Paul and Carla decided to move to St. Catherine's when they moved in with Carla's family, and the rapes in Scarborough stopped. Her family loved Paul. Tammy, Carla's younger sister, was especially devoted by him and looked up to him as though he was her older brother. Tammy was only 15 at the time, and Paul became infatuated with her, particularly because she was a virgin and Paul wanted to take people's virginity. When Paul met Carla, she hadn't been a virgin, so she was heartbroken because that was the only thing she couldn't give him. Carla began to open the curtains while Tammy was getting dressed for Paul to look in and fondle himself. Carla still felt guilty and thought she wasn't doing enough, so she decided to give Paul Tammy's virginity. Around this time, Carla was working at a veterinary clinic, and in July 1990, she stole supplies from the clinic to drug Tammy, so that Tammy would be unconscious. However, she woke up before anything could happen, so they left it, and it wasn't until December 23rd that they tried again. Once everyone was asleep, Paul and Carla convinced Tammy to stay up with them. Once again, Carla laced Tammy's food with a drug and she fell unconscious. During the time she was unconscious, Carla and Paul raped her. Tammy choked on her own vomit while waking up and died. Before calling 911, they hid the evidence, redressed her and moved her into her room. However, Tammy had chemical burns on her face from where the cloth with anesthetic had burnt her. She was pronounced dead at the hospital without having regained consciousness. Paul told the police he had tried to revive her unsuccessfully and the death was ruled an accident. An important fact about the chemical burns that Tammy had received was that the drug they used was an anesthesia, halothane, which reduces blood pressure, lowers pulse rate, and depresses respiration. It also induces muscle relaxation and reduces pain sensitivity. However, due to Carla working in a vet clinic, they had specific doses for animal sizes. And for Tammy, they didn't work out any dose, and they just kept holding up the cloth to her face. This is where she received her chemical burns. They also filmed the rape on the camera that Paul had been using earlier when filming the Christmas dinner. They were in the family room because that was where they would have had to have been to watch television. Paul had actually encouraged Carla to join in, and she did. And eventually, when they'd finished, that's when Tammy woke up. That's where she choked on her own vomit and passed away. This event started a chain reaction of Paul and Carla's life of crime together. After this, they moved away to let her parents grieve. Carla had no remorse for the death of her sister. She wrote a horrible text to her friend that her parents were mourning that they needed to get over themselves. Paul and Carla continued to film themselves while having sex, and Carla would dress in her sister's old clothes and reenact the rape and speak sexually about her sister's death. No one connected the fact that when Paul and Carla moved away, the Scarborough's rapings had stopped, but a whole new string of rapes had started where they'd moved to. About a month later, Carla found their next victim. This was a girl she worked with, and so she invited her back to their house and drugged her. Once she was unconscious, she called Paul and told him she had an early wedding gift for him. They sexually assaulted and raped her. However, when she woke up, she didn't remember anything, and so they let her go. In the early morning of June 15th, 1991, Paul had been driving through Burlington to steal license plates, and that's when he spotted 14-year-old Leslie Mahaffey. She'd missed her curfew after attending a friend's wake and had been locked out of her house. He left his car and approached her, saying he wanted to break into a neighbour's house. Unfazed, she asked if he had any cigarettes. When he led her to his car, he blindfolded her, forced her into the car, drove to their home and informed Carla that they had another victim. They videotaped themselves torturing and sexually abusing Leslie while they listened to Bob Marley and David Bowie. During the abuse, Leslie tells Bernardo that her blindfold seems to be slipping, which signals that she could possibly identify them if she lived. The following day, Bernardo claims that Carla fed her a lethal dose of the drug Halcyon. Carla claims that he strangled her. They ended up putting her body in the basement, and the day after, they had Carla's entire family round for dinner. After everyone had left,
They decided that the best way to dispose of the evidence would be to dismember Leslie and encase each part of her remains in cement. Paul bought a dozen bags of cement at a hardware store the next day. He ended up keeping the receipt, which didn't help at his trial at all. He used his grandfather's circular saw to dismember Leslie, and they made a number of trips to dump the cement blocks in Lake Gibson. At least one of the blocks weighed 90 kilograms and was beyond their ability to sink. It lay near the shore where it was found by some men on a fishing trip. Her orthodontic appliance was what helped identify her.
26 months after Bernardo had admitted a DNA sample when he was a suspect, the Toronto police were informed that it matched that of the Scarborough rapist and immediately placed him under 24-hour surveillance.
Carla and Paul were questioned by police several times in connection with the Scarborough rapist investigation. The officer filed a report, and on the 12th of May 1992, an NRP sergeant and constable briefly interviewed him. The officers decided that he was an unlikely suspect, although he did admit that he'd been questioned in connection with the Scarborough rapes before. 3 days later, the Green Ribbon Task Force was created to investigate the murders of Leslie Mahaffey, returned to work on the 4th of January 1993. Her sceptical co-workers called her parents, and although they rescued her the following day by physically removing her from the house, she went back in frantically searching for something. Her parents took her to St. Catherine's General Hospital, where she gave a statement to the NRP that she was a battered spouse and filed charges against him. The Toronto Sexual Assault Squad investigators interviewed Carla on February 9th, 1993. Despite their suspicions about Bernardo, she focused on his abuse of her. Later that night, she told her uncle and aunt that Bernardo was the Scarborough rapist, that she and Bernardo were involved in the rape and murder of Mahaffey and French, and that the rapes were recorded on videotape. The NRP reopened its investigation on Tammy's death. 2 days later, Carla met with Niagara Falls lawyer George Walker, who sought legal immunity in exchange for her cooperation. She was also placed under 24-hour surveillance. The couple's name change was approved on February 13th, 1993. The next day, Walker met with Crown Criminal Law Officer Director Murray Siegel. After Walker told Siegel about the videotapes of the rapes, Siegel advised him that due to Carla's involvement in the crimes, full immunity was not a possibility. On May 5th, Walker was informed that the government was offering Carla a plea bargain of 12 years, which she had 1 week to accept. If she declined, the government would charge her with 2 counts of first-degree murder, 1 count of second-degree murder, and other crimes. Walker accepted the offer, and Carla later agreed to it. On May 14th, her plea bargain was finalised and she began giving statements to police investigators. She told police that Bernardo boasted that he had raped as many as 30 women, twice as many as the police had suspected, calling him the happy rapist. After a lengthy trial and investigation, on September 1st, 1995, Paul Bernardo was convicted of 2 first-degree murders and 2 aggravated sexual assaults and sentenced to life in prison without parole for at least 25 years. He was designated a dangerous offender, making him unlikely to ever be released. Carla, however, due to her plea bargain, only had to serve a 12-year sentence for manslaughter. Using a psychological assessment tool to assess the presence of psychopathy in individuals, Paul Bernardo scored 35 out of 40. Paul Bernardo became eligible for parole in February 2018. On the 17th of October 2018, he was denied day and full parole by the Parole Board of Canada. Certain restrictions were placed on Carla Homoka as a condition of her release. She was to tell the police her home address, work address, and with whom she lives. She was required to notify police as soon as any of that changed. She was required to notify police of any change to her name. If she planned to be away from her home for more than 48 hours, she had to give 72 hours notice. She could not contact Paul Bernardo, the families of Leslie Mahaffey and Kristen French, or any of other victims or any violent criminals. She was forbidden to be with people under the age of 16. She was forbidden from consuming drugs other than prescription medicine. She was required to continue therapy and counselling, and she was required to provide police with a DNA sample. She was released on July 4th, 2005. On November 30th, 2005, a Quebec Superior Court judge lifted all restrictions that had been imposed on Carla, saying that there was not enough evidence to justify them. The Sun Media reported in 2007 that Carla Homoka had given birth to a baby boy. On December 14th, 2007, City News reported that Homoka had left Canada for the Antilles so that her then one-year-old could lead a more normal life. She later had two more children. As of January 2020, she lives in Salaberry de Valleyfield without her husband or children.